At the start of the pandemic, 2 million of the most vulnerable people in England were given an instruction. You need to shield.
People got a letter with a government logo over the top saying, you're clinically extremely vulnerable, stay inside. And then the next letter people receive, literally, is, you can now go out.
On Friday, the National Shielding Programme is being put on pause. The government says it's time to go back to work.
People who will be required to go back to work, that's an incredibly difficult situation and quite a personal dilemma. Do I risk my job or do I risk my health?
With hundreds of new coronavirus cases being reported every day, is it too soon? What will happen to the people who are most at risk?
I was working in a care home. They did tell me that they couldn't guarantee my safety. It was suggested that I should just leave.
You're listening to Stories of Our Times from The Times and The Sunday Times. I'm Manveen Rana. Today, is shielding ending too soon?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Judy and I'm 58 and I'm married and I have three sons, grown sons, and a granddaughter who is nearly 7 months.
Judy from Northampton has multiple sclerosis. She has to take drugs that suppress her immune system. That meant that under government guidance, she's been shielding, staying at home and taking extreme caution, much more than the lockdown the rest of us have been living through.
My granddaughter is one on Christmas Eve, and I said to my husband, we'll be together and I'll be able to hold her on Christmas Eve. But I don't think that's the case now.
A few weeks ago, people who were shielding were told they could start to take tentative steps out of the house for the first time in months.
The first trip I ever did was in the car, and I stayed in the car, and somebody walked past, and I said to my husband, get them to go away. It was that bad. I've been to a garden centre, which I hated. People just weren't, they wouldn't stay away from me. It was too overwhelming. It feels like everybody walking towards you has got COVID all over them. You get terrific sensory overload and everything is loud. People are loud and the cars are loud.
Before the pandemic, Judy worked in a charity shop.
I'm a social, very social person. I like working in my shop and I like all my customers and I like being busy. So it's very much the other side of my character. But yeah, that's what it feels like. Too much, too much. I have to go back to work soon and I have to try and face this.
As we take these steps, we should be focusing on the most vulnerable.
On the 16th of March, in the first daily government briefing on coronavirus, Boris Johnson introduced the concept of shielding that would radically change the lives of more than 2 million people.
And to ensure that those with the most serious health conditions are largely shielded from contact, from social contact, for around 12 weeks.
The guidance on shielding, issued in March, said people like Judy should stay indoors at all times. The government would even deliver food parcels if people didn't have family or friends who could shop for them. And those who are shielding should socially distance, even from members of their own family, in the same home. Now, those rules are changing.
Our advice to those shielding is to take some steps now to start coming back to a more normal lifestyle. And then secondly, from August the 1st, we will pause shielding.
Today, I'm talking to three people, Sean, Judy and Lindsay, about the impact of that decision on their lives. And we'll hear from the charities who are worried people could be forced to choose between their jobs and their health.
I can't see you.
Here we go. I'm currently broadcasting from a cupboard. Ta-da!
Oh, my God. Do you want us to send the SAS and rescue you?
Please. Now, how are you?
I'm all right.
Sean O'Neill is the Times chief reporter, working on investigations and major stories. And for the past 10 years, he's been living with chronic leukaemia.
I love being in a newsroom. It's a kind of cantankerous, grumpy, funny, dark-humoured place to work. And I've always enjoyed that atmosphere. So I really miss it at the moment. But it's not the same, is it? You know, my colleagues who are in there, there's a kind of small skeleton staff producing the paper, you know, in the office.
Yeah, but won't be back to normal.
Yeah, it's not normal.
But you're determined to go back.
I am, yeah. A lot of my colleagues think I'm bonkers as well because they're quite happy working from home. But if this is the new normal, I don't like it. It has been increasingly difficult. I haven't really ever adhered strictly to the shielding instructions. I always felt that I would bend the rules a bit, partly because I've been living with my condition for so long. I have a kind of built-in caution, almost like a muscle memory around, you know, the times when I had chemo.
I can imagine.
I have to kind of take myself out of circulation for a while and then gently introduce yourself back into it, you know.
So you were sort of really cautious already. In many ways, all the things that we're all learning now, kind of been a way of life for you for a while.
At the beginning, I was very cautious. Then when I had chemotherapy, I was extremely cautious coming back to work after that. And there was a period, you know, where I never went on the tube, ever. But at the same time, my consultants and my clinical nurses were always telling me, you've got to try and live life as normally as possible. So I kind of take the same lessons into this. But, you know, some of the rules I think we were given as shielders, you know, don't come within 3 steps of any member of your family.
At any time, not even sort of the people at home.
Yeah, the people at home, you were supposed to stay 3 steps away from them. And frankly, that was, for me, that just seemed silly, you know. I've got kids aged 10 and 12. They don't understand how to stay 3 steps away. So I never took that one seriously or enforced that one, really. I have so kind of little faith in the government rules and regulations and the way they were enforced and the way they've been interpreted by certain people in the government that I decided to make my own sort of risk assessments. And
that's so interesting. Why do you have so little faith in the official guidance?
Because I could see this coming. You know, it was happening all over Europe.
Yeah.
And we were so late to the lockdown. That's why we made a decision as a family to lock down personally earlier, because we decided then we have to make our own decisions here.
You have sort of relaxed the rules a bit now. Tell me what that's been like. I mean, have you used public transport or have you been out shopping? What are you doing?
My one and only venture onto public transport, I had an appointment for a checkup at the hospital, which had been delayed. So I had to go in for my blood tests and all that. And I diligently set off to go on my bike. You know, I thought, you know, I'll avoid public transport. Literally, the moment I went out the door, there was a kind of thunderclap and a downpour. It was absolutely hammering down. So I went, sod that, I'm getting the train. So I got my face mask on.
How did that feel, though?
Weird. I'm very wary about public transport. I'm very wary about my great love, which is the pub. I haven't been in a pub yet. I keep walking past pubs and going, God, I really want to go in and have a pint, but I'm just not ready. I'm just not there mentally yet where I feel it's safe enough.
Can you see yourself doing that sort of before the end of summer?
It just doesn't feel right, the pub. Yeah, I'm a fan of social distancing still, I'm afraid.
Fair enough.
And I think if I go to the pub and have a few pints, I'll be hugging everybody. So,
is that something you've really missed?
Yeah. I greet nearly all my friends with a hug, apart from the really grumpy ones. and yeah, we probably were a more tactile society than we thought we were, because I think lots of people miss hugs and pats on the back and all the rest of it, you know, handshakes, all of that. Yeah.
Look at you, pats on the back. Well, look, take me back to March, which is, you know, last time I saw you, last time we spoke properly. What's been happening to you since? I mean, when did you find out that you had to shield? What was the advice?
The advice was stay indoors, do not go out under any circumstances. If you need fresh air, sit near an open window, sleep separately.
But just don't go out ever.
Do not go out at all.
Wow.
Cook separately from your family, eat separately from your family, use a separate bathroom if you can. Do not come within 3 steps of any member of your family. There were these letters and text messages and things.
What did they say?
You must shield. You have been identified as extremely clinically vulnerable.
Extremely clinically vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because I know they sort of categorise it as sort of clinically vulnerable and extremely clinically vulnerable. So you're sort of, you're in the
I'm in the extreme category. Yeah. The elite shielders.
Yes, the elite. I like that. In Northampton, Judy has been writing online about her experience of shielding with MS and her fears for the future. There was a bit in your piece which I just found staggering and incredibly moving at the same time, where you said you actually had a conversation with your husband where you told him he'd be better off leaving you.
Yeah, I did. Yes, I've had that several times, actually.
That.
I was very frustrated, and all I could see was that he was giving up his freedom. I just said to him, if you keep staying here with me, you're not going to go and meet the family and be able to, you know, socialise and have a barbecue and all these different things. And I said to him, you need to go, because your life, why should you have to give up your life just because of me? And he just looked at me and said, well, okay, I thank you very much for telling me that, but no, I'm stopping. I'm staying.
Bless him. So while you've been shielding, has there been much sort of support from the government? I mean, have you been part of this national shielding programme? How has that worked?
I think it's been 4 text messages, 2 letters and a phone call from the local council to see if I needed a food box. That's it.
That's it?
Yeah.
No sort of updates or, you know, here's the latest advice or...
No, I mean, there was a letter saying shielding is coming to an end, but that was the first communication I'd had for about 2 months.
Well, I got an email very late at night saying we will change guidance for the shielding at 10:30 at night, I think.
Charlotte Augst is the chief executive of National Voices, an umbrella group of some of the leading British health charities.
And everybody was dismayed, because we knew that the phone lines were going to ring on Monday morning with people desperate for information, and we had no way of getting prepared. And then the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care announced through tweet that the guidance for the shielding was changing.
Matt Hancock was tweeting a link to an article which sort of explained some of this, but it was in the Telegraph behind a paywall.
Yeah, what can you say? This is really not how guidance that impacts so directly on people's lives can be communicated. If this was guidance for businesses, I just don't think that you could get away with that. People got a letter with a government logo over the top saying you're clinically extremely vulnerable. And then the next letter people receive literally is you can now go out. That they're no longer vulnerable, and that they should please go back to work. I think this has done untold damage to the relationship that shielding people feel they have with this government.
Really?
Yes, I do think that. A subsection of the people on our focus group actually went as far as sort of pursuing proper conspiracy theories around how people living with chronic illness or people living with disability are just dispensable, and that in a way, if they don't survive this crisis, you know, that's okay. We would obviously never indulge such conspiracy theories, but...
But they really felt that they were being almost targeted or left to suffer.
Yeah, because... and a lot of people who would not subscribe to such conspiracy theories felt that whether they fare well during this crisis or have a rough time was not very high on the list of government priorities.
One charity, Macmillan Cancer Support, told us they've been receiving 1,000 calls a week about coronavirus and that two-thirds of people with cancer who are currently shielding worry they won't get the help they need. I mean, I know you're raring to go, you're desperate to get back into the office. But, you know, working for The Times, we're also able to work from home.
Yeah.
But there will be some people who suddenly aren't covered by,
yeah,
by, you know, government furlough or the government saying vulnerable people have to shield, who now don't really have a choice, I guess.
No. No. And I think that's going to be really difficult. And you hear stories about people feeling very anxious, feeling that they will be required to go to work. They will have to go to work.
Yeah.
Or that they will have to find another occupation. That's an incredibly difficult situation and quite a personal dilemma for a lot of them. You know, do I risk my job or do I risk my health? You know, that, they're faced with a very stark choice there.
Each announcement has been so hard. It just feels like we're being pushed off a cliff. They say go back to work if it's COVID safe, but what's COVID safe? And you just endless questions now, just endless questions. At the moment, I'm angry at myself. And that's come up a lot because if I didn't have MS, I wouldn't be in this situation. So that's been very tough.
Oh, but you're hardly to blame for that.
I know.
Does it feel like the timing is right? How do you feel about shielding suddenly stopping?
I think it's too soon. And the reason I think it's too soon is because we've gone from quite a lot of things being closed to quite a lot of things being open very quickly. And there hasn't been time to see how this affects the rates and the you know, the numbers.
So you're officially furloughed at the moment?
Yeah, I'm furloughed at the moment. But you see, that's another concern, because once we get to the other side of August, I think I can still be furloughed, but I can't have statutory sick pay for this. So if work decides that they want me back and I am not ready to go back, then I will have to go unpaid. I would hate it if I have to give up my job. I love my job. But my health is more important.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I do think it is problematic to not provide any kind of guidance as to what financial help might be available to people if their workplace can't be made safe.
That's Charlotte Augst again.
At the moment, some people are furloughed. The furlough scheme is running out. Some people are on statutory sick pay. Statutory sick pay is running out. And then there is a benefit around employment assistance for people who are too sick to work. And by definition, they're not too sick to work. You know, they won't pass those tests. It's about, can you stand and can you open an envelope and can you answer a phone call? And if you can do these things, then you can work. You won't get that benefit. And we have pushed repeatedly the government as to what people should do if their workplace can't be made safe. And we have had no answer. The only answer we get is you need to talk to your employer. But those are people who are chronically ill, who've just been off work for quite some time. They're in a really vulnerable position to start an argument with their employer during a time when record number of people are being made redundant. The knock-on effects of people losing their jobs right now this winter could be huge.
If you have been shielding,
yeah,
and now the government says that as of the 31st you can go back to work,
yeah.
Do you have any amount of choice in that? Can you say, I don't feel safe doing it? Will you still have some kind of government protection? Will you get some money to be able to stay at home and be safe?
No, you won't get. I mean, we have asked this question on more than one occasion and we have not had an answer. We don't think it's fair to just say to employers and employees, well, sort it out. Because some employers, large employers, might be able to say, oh, we just take this hit. But if you're a small employer, and that work needs doing, are you going to continue paying someone's salary who can't do the job? And given we have furloughed millions and millions of people recently, it seems a bit difficult for us to understand why you can't just continue furloughing this very small number of people who can't safely return to work.
What will happen to them? I mean, are you hearing their
concerns? Well, we've already heard that people are losing their jobs. I know of a person who's in a care home and she was just told in no uncertain terms that this is not a job she should be doing anymore.
I was working in a care home. They did tell me that they couldn't guarantee my safety.
Lindsay is 32 and she's worked in healthcare since she was 19. She lives in Sheffield with her husband and her daughter, who's also shielding.
I have chronic asthma, so I take 3 inhalers, and also my daughter's on, she has an autoimmune disease, so she's on steroids as well.
So a double reason to be shielding.
Yeah, we're in the, like, clinically the most vulnerable category.
So what happened at work when you told them you'd need to shield?
As soon as I told them I needed to shield, they wanted me to get sick notes from the doctors, sending copies of my letter. And I was trying to explain, doctor isn't going to give a sick note because I'm not sick. I don't think they were very believing at first.
You'd think a care home would know, would understand
the issue.
You would,
wouldn't you? You think they would, and you think they would be a bit more supportive about it.
And then, I mean, what happened?
I didn't get furloughed because they told me it was my choice, so they just put me on sick pay.
So, hang on, you weren't even offered the choice of being furloughed?
No.
Wow, so they just put you on sick pay?
Yeah.
That sick pay is the statutory basic of £96 a week, which until now has been paid to people who are shielding and can't be furloughed. But on the 31st of July, even that will come to an end.
As time went on, they kept reminding me that I wasn't there doing my job. And I said, obviously, I have to not just protect myself, it's my daughter as well. I was starting to get worried, obviously, about sick pay finishing. And they said once the sick pay period ended, if I stayed with them, that I just wouldn't get any more support. I would just be on unpaid leave.
Wow. So because of the shielding rules and because you had been putting your own life and your daughter's life in danger, if you'd ignored them, they would have made you stay at home on zero pay.
Yeah. And they told me they hadn't had a case for so many days, but they obviously couldn't guarantee my safety. It was suggested that I should just leave.
Did you feel like you were forced to quit?
Yeah, I think it felt very much forced. So they didn't have to say they sacked me.
I mean, you sort of run out of options then, don't you? I mean, I guess you kind of have to quit to try to get some kind of benefit.
I was
benefit.
In the corner. Yeah, I couldn't get really any help. We tried to get help without me like leaving, but when I signed up to Universal Credit, the first month we got £21 on top of my sick pay.
That was it?
Yeah.
What now?
At the moment, we're looking at our options. I mean, I've applied for a few jobs.
How do you even apply for new jobs when you're still shielding at home?
I've had to ask people because people have offered me interviews and I've been saying, I can't come in for an interview. Could we do it on Zoom? And then I don't get a reply.
That's so hard.
This will be my last month's pay from my job, sick pay. But it'll be my last month. We are like into our overdrafts now. It's actually a year today we bought our first house. So we're sort of in the situation where we've bought a house and we can't get help with paying the mortgage.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's where we're at.
That's a hell of a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure.
How do you feel about the end of shielding? Will you feel safe in a few days' time? Will you feel safe just going back out into the world and looking for jobs and going to interviews?
I don't think I will feel safe, but I think it's a necessity. Now I don't really have an option. You know, Universal Credit aren't helping for whatever reason. I mean, my daughter gets disability benefits because she's disabled, but that's not what I should be using her disability money for. I mean, we need a new pair of crutches for her because she has juvenile idiopathic arthritis and we need to get a new pair of crutches, but we can't afford them at the moment because her money that we would normally use to get her stuff is having to go on like different... I mean, we get a food parcel, but it's just for me and her. So it's not really enough to feed all of us. And we had one this morning. They come once a week at about 6 o'clock in the morning. They leave them on the doorstep. You get soup, bread, oats, tinned meatballs and fish and things like that. I mean, we're grateful for it, but you get the basics.
Yeah. The food parcels you've been getting. I understand all of that ends when shielding ends too.
Yes, it does.
How will that affect you?
I mean, it will be a bit difficult. I mean, we've not had to buy the essentials. I mean, there's not a massive amount, is it? But it has helped to save a little bit on essentials. But we're going to have to go back to buying that. And before, it wouldn't have been like a lot to us to have to buy those things. But being out of work, I think it'll make a big difference.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really been thought through. I mean, there needs to be some sort of help, I think. It's not just going to be normal again.
What's your best hope for what might happen over the rest of the year?
To get a new job where I can at least feel safe and carry on providing.
Good luck with it.
Thank you very much.
Charlotte, for those people who've been shielding so far and now seem to be falling between the cracks, what do you think needs to be done?
We argue all it would take is maybe extend the furlough for this very small group of people for another 6 months until we get through the winter and see where we're at then. There were 2 million people on the shielding list. Of those, maybe half are not of an age where they need to be working. And then, you know, the remaining million, a lot of them can return to work because their workplace can be made safe. But those few hundred thousand who can't, we just think that employment question and that benefit question needs to be resolved. Because I think one of the things that carries a society through a crisis like the one we're just living through is trust and a feeling that the interests and the needs of vulnerable people and people who need extra protection come quite high on the list of priorities.
We asked to speak to the government minister responsible for the shielding programme in England, but our request for an interview was declined. In a statement, a government spokesperson said, "We know people need time to adjust to the end of the emergency food parcel service and understand their anxieties about shielding coming to an end. And that's why we've recently written to the 2.2 million people across England with information outlining the support that will still be available to them going forward from August the 1st. Given the low incidence rate in the community, we are now able to carefully relax the guidance for those who are clinically extremely vulnerable, so people can start to regain a degree of normality in their daily lives."
I'm much more worried about the winter than I am now. Infection is at quite a low level at the moment in the community, but I think it, you know, all the lessons we see from China and everything are that in the winter it will be much more prolific, and that worries me far more. And I wonder if our return to normality will be reversed then.
Yeah. If I remember rightly, you do owe me a drink.
I think I do. Yeah.
One day in a beer garden somewhere.
Oh, please God.
You've been listening to Stories of Our Times with me, Manveen Rana, and my guests, The Times chief reporter, Sean O'Neill, the chief executive of National Voices, Charlotte Augst, Judy in Northampton, and Lindsay in Sheffield. You can read all of Sean's reporting with a digital subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times. Visit thetimes.co.uk/subscribe to find out more. The producer was James Shield. The executive producer is Leo Hornack, and the deputy executive producer is Poppy Damon. Sound design was by Carla Patella and Falcon Kisseltuk. Music by Breakmaster Cylinder and Ketzer. If you get a chance, please do leave us a review. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.